Can we open up our Bibles to Matthew chapter 5? Matthew chapter 5 is where we're going to continue. But before we continue, let's look at some of the things we went over. Jesus was born the same way we were. He was born of a woman and full of trouble. So he came in a way that we do not have an excuse. Jesus was baptized and was tempted in all points such as we. And again, it removes all the excuses that we might come up with and thinking why we don't need to be baptized. At 12, with all the knowledge Jesus had, he went back with his parents and was subject to them, increased in wisdom, stature, and favor with God and man. This removed the excuse of those who think they know more and don't have to listen to their parents. Jesus went on the mount and instructed the disciples and the multitude. He shared with them how to be the salt of the earth, how to be the light of the world. He came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. Jesus said, "Except your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter into the kingdom." He shared how we should be careful how we treat our brother. We need to get our heart together so our mind will be right. The reason the hand offends is because of what the eye sees. We must destroy the lust of the eye by the renewing of our minds. Now let's look at verse 31 of chapter 5. It hath been said, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery." For us, this is a hard saying. We want to do what they were doing back in Moses' time. For in Moses' time, they gave divorce papers back then for any and every reason. In Deuteronomy, it said, "When a man had taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he had found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house." We know today the man don't get the house. But uncleanness does not mean adultery. For an adulterous woman would be put to death if she was found in the act. So they found a way without her being put to death. If a woman was found unfaithful, then she was taken before the priests where it could be proven. This was called the trial of jealousy. Marriage was serious back then. Today, it has lost its value and meaning. Men then used any reason they could find for a way out. If she burnt his food, spoiled it by oversalting it, over roasting it, if he found another woman more beautiful, if the husband saw her arms uncovered in the streets, if her garments showed too much cleavage, these were reasons they found to be justifiable. If her face was uncovered, if her dress had a split on both sides, if she talked with men or joked with young men and smelled that might rise from her body because of her sweat or her breath. These were reasons they were permitted to give a writing of divorcement, among many other things. You might think this is crazy, but much of this is no different today. Jesus said, for the cause of fornication, you cause her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. In Mark chapter 10, verse 4, this is what they told Jesus. They said Moses suffered to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away. In other words, Moses said we could do it. We are no different today. We try to use the law to justify what we want rather than forgive, go to the word, and reconcile. We are so caught up in man's rights, we have forgotten God's righteousness. Now, this is what Jesus told them in the next two verses. And Jesus answered and said unto them, for the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. I would like to say this also as well. In the beginning, he created man and woman, and not man and man or woman and woman. When you prefer to be someone other than what you were born to be, or go through surgeries to change your sex, you are saying God made a mistake in how he created you. As far as marriage, this only skims the surface. So let's continue. In verse 33, again ye have heard that if he had been, it had been said by them of old time, thou shalt not swear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oaths. This has to do with having respect for God's name or having a reverence use for it. The Pharisees taught a person was only obligated to swear by the name of God in public court or justice. But in ordinance and common living, they could swear by any creature. Jesus said in verse 34, but I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shall thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. This is a perfect remedy for shunning the danger of swearing. Our word should be our bond, and we should not have to swear in the courts today. They are beginning to recognize this. Now you do not put your hand on a Bible. This is a conflict between church and state. Second, when you raise your right hand, they ask, do you swear or affirm? To affirm means you declare to be true. So when they use both words, you can say, I affirm, meaning you declare what you are about to say is true, meaning your word is your bond. Verse 38 said, you have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Don't seek private revenge. Leave the avenging to God and the law. No matter what the issue is, don't take matters into your own hand. Romans 13, 1 and 2 tells us, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist it shall receive to themselves damnation. Don't be a vigilant. A vigilant is a person who becomes a member of a group. They do it without authority of law, and they assume forcing power. This is just what is going on today. God's people should not be caught up in that. People are taking the law into their own hands and still calling themselves Christians. Verse 39. But I say unto you that you resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Paul said to the Romans and Thessalonians, and Peter wrote, do not render evil for evil. The first thing we want to do when we are wrong is get even. You do wrong to me, I'll do wrong to you. You do right by me, I'll do right by you. This is not the way of God or the way we should act. Verse 40 said, and if any man will sue thee at the law. Take away thy coat, let him have the cloak also. One writer explains it in that those times it meant, let him have all he asks and more. It is better to lose a suit of clothes than to draw into a suit in law. It is not clear exactly what is meant for us this day and time. Many things that applied then in that country is quite different than what exists here today. But we do know the principle of good for evil, and we should not be seeking revenge. There are many things to examine and put in account of how they apply to us now. With this scripture, it would be good to look close before pursuing. Verse 41 says, and whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. When you are called upon or asked to do something, be willing to go the extra mile. Be willing to help them achieve what needs to be accomplished. Verse 42 says, give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not away. Here is a twofold type of love. Give to them that are in great need, and lend to them who wish to borrow. What this is saying is some have need but cannot give back, while some can give back and wish to pay back. Whether it is to borrow or to give, if you have it, don't hold back. If you see your brother in need and shut up your bowels of compassion, how dwelleth the love of God in you? We must follow the actions of God in giving. This is done by giving cheerfully, sincerely, and discreetly. Under the law in Deuteronomy, it said, but you shall open thine hand wide unto him and shall surely lend him sufficient for his need and in that which he wanted. Under grace, it says, every man according as he purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. Whether you follow the law or you are under grace, you have a responsibility. But today, man's greed is for himself. Mm-hmm. You see this in the gas prices, the food prices, and the cost of everything else to survive and live today. Look at verse 43. You have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. Today, we hate our enemy and we hate our neighbor. Today, love is obsolete. People don't know what love is anymore. But Jesus shows how the love of God goes beyond the love of man. Verse 44 said, but I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Love your enemies. Who can obey this command? None but he who has the mind of Christ. It cannot be done through denomination, tradition, or religion. This love shows two meanings. You love when you approve of the conduct of another. Second, you love even though you cannot approve of their conduct. This is the love of benevolence, and this love we are to bear towards our enemies. I think all will agree, when it comes to God's love and how your flesh is treated by man, there is much to learn. We don't know what we would do until it is done. It is impossible to love the conduct of a man who curses you, reviles you, injures you, destroys your personal property, and violates all the laws of God. But though we may hate their conduct, we still should wish them well. That's the God in you. When it says, bless them that curse you, it is saying those who say and do things that should not be. It does not mean curse them back or do them harm. It does not mean give them the finger or wish them harm again. Show them love does not mean you are a punk. Showing them love, does not mean that you are a punk, weak, soft, or a coward. it shows them that you are godlike. Listen to what Romans 12:20 says. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. How many can say, if someone wronged me and they needed something to eat, you would still do so without trying to poison them? And those who make continual war upon you and constantly harass you, pray for them. Pray for them. Question. When you pray at night, or when you pray, is it only for those that do and mean you good? Is your conversation with God a prayer of complaint or giving of thanks? Those who persecute you are those who press hard and pursue you with hatred and malice. A man can be our enemy in three different ways. First, in his heart by hatred. Second, in his words by cursing. Third, in his actions by continually harassing and abusing. We are shown how we should behave. The hatred we are to be to meet with love. The cursing or evil words we are to meet with good words and blessings, which is love. And the repeated injury acts we are to meet with continual prayer to God for the man's salvation, which is again love. Before we received Christ, many of us had issues and someone prayed for us. What some of us did was worse, was worthy of jail, but God spared and gave us mercy. God tells us this so we can do what it says in the next verse, verse 45, that you may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. God has allowed the sun to rise and the rain to fall on both the evil and good. If God can love and overlook, if we have the Spirit of God in us, if Jesus forgave and gave us an example, why can't we surrender and do it? Selah. Verse 46 says, for if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? If you only love your friends, this does nothing for God's sake. And if you love only those who love you, it says nothing about you. If you love for the sake of pleasure, you only praise yourself. God hates sin. That is his enemy. And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so. Salute means to greet. Back then, the Turks, the Greeks, the Christians, the Protestants, the Europeans, the Roman Catholics, and those of the Muslim faith, they never answered those who addressed them with a compliment of Salam, meaning peace be upon you. We are not talking about mingling with the world here. We are talking about those who are walking with God. Today, Christians hesitate to say God bless you to another Christian. In some cases, one seems to feel they are better than the other, rather than find Jesus as the common ground. They pick at trivial things that have no ground. It's time to embrace verse 48, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. It is time for us to become mature as our Father is, mature in our words, mature in our actions, mature in our thoughts, mature in our love to ourselves, as mature in love towards others. It is time we walk in the Beatitudes and not our attitudes. It's time we became a light that shines and salt that seasons. With that, my time is up, and I thank you for yours.